Welcome to Behind the Headlines. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce with the Salt Lake Tribune. Today on the program, we have LDS policies, the bear's ears, and lesbian moms, much more. And joining me this morning in studio, Tribune managing editor Dave Noyce is here. Dave, welcome.
Hi, Jennifer.
Also with us, health, education, and environment editor Rachel Piper returns. Rachel, hello.
Good morning.
We have government and politics editor Dan Harry. Dan, welcome.
Good morning.
And justice and LGBT reporter Jennifer Dobner is back. Hi, Jen.
Hi, good morning.
You can join us, too, with questions and comments about the week's news. Put those to the hashtag TribTalk on Twitter. Put your comments on the website, sltrib.com, or you can give us a jingle. 801-355-TALK is that number, 801-355-8255. The story that has just dominated the headlines this week is the LDS policy that defines gay couples as apostates, and another one which bars their children from being baptized or participating in other religious rites. Dave, remind listeners how church leaders justify this new policy.
They couch it as actually protecting, obviously, the faith, but also the children. They see it as same-sex couples who enter into a marriage are I guess, acting in open defiance of what church teachings are. In their view, then, I think that justifies a mandatory disciplinary council that could lead to excommunication, though that's sort of, as they see it, protecting the faith. The children, which is probably the most controversial part of it, they see it as protecting children and families, that it's allowing minor children, those under 18, to continue to live with their parents, be with their parents, and not have to do anything, make a choice, you could say, between their parents and their religion. Of course, many outside the church and many inside the church kind of see that just the opposite, that it actually can harm children.
And the policy has been compared to the church policy over polygamy. In what ways are these different? What ways are they the same?
Well, you know, Todd Christofferson, a junior, although becoming more senior, Mormon apostle, explained that it was analogous, that they've had this policy for FLDS, FLDS polygamists. They could be FLDS or another sect that practices polygamy, or people within the faith who practice polygamy and then are excommunicated if that comes to light. So they see that, and the children essentially the same. There's some minor differences possibly, some people don't necessarily see it that way, of course, because the Mormon Church used to practice polygamy and is trying to get rid of those vestiges of that practice. Mormon Church has never practiced same-sex marriage, of course, so in that case, it's probably not analogous at all.
The action, as you noted, has been condemned by many outside of the church, but disorienting to even the faithful. How are people reacting?
Well, I mean, the policy has its defenders. But there are, and many critics within the faith, but there are many people that are right in the middle, I guess you could say, and they don't like the harshness of this. It seems harsh to them. And that stretches from, you know, people sitting in the pews to people sitting on the stand who hold lay leadership positions. There are people in bishoprics and stake presidencies who are questioning this policy or disagreeing with it, calling it for it to be modified or changed. These people know many of these same-sex members and the children of these unions, and they worship with them and see them, and they're afraid of what it will do to them. They know these are their neighbors, and so it's really proving to be quite divisive.
Jennifer, you've been fairly involved in reporting this story as well. How are people within the LGBT community reacting? I know there was a family homo evening on Monday night.
Well, I think much like Dave said, they're kind of all over the map. Some of them were raised Mormon, and this further separates from their devout family members. We've seen also, though, a huge outpouring of support for this community, and I think Troy Williams from Equality Utah posted on Facebook last night his deep gratitude for the love and compassion that he's seen over the past week, because there is sort of a heightened sense that these people have been marginalized for a long time, and they need love and support, and they seem to be getting it.
What is, I keep hearing things about a mass resignation from church members. They're going to file their official separation papers with the church. What's the latest there, Jen?
You catch me a little off guard, because there is a mass resignation event planned for tomorrow here in Salt Lake City. I've been seeing a lot of traffic about people gathering different places I think one was at a bar earlier this week where, 50 or 100 people all signed their resignation letters. I think what this is for many people is a decision point. Maybe you grew up in the church and you aren't quite where they are on all the issues, but you've never taken your name off the rolls, and now some people are deciding this is their last straw, and so they're taking action. We probably never will know exactly how many people do that, because the church isn't exactly open about those types of numbers. But I suspect it could be significant. Hmm.
Tomorrow's event, I believe, is at City Creek Park, and I think there's more than 1,000 people that have signed up saying they're going to go. Now, it doesn't mean they're all going to turn in resignation letters, but there will be notaries there to notarize their letters to send to the church. We have actually asked the LDS Church if they've seen an increase in the number of people asking that their names be removed from the church to disassociate it with the faith, and they have not responded to that question. Of course, they don't need to respond, but we would like to know if that's having an effect. It's hard to tell how deep some of these people are within the faith. I think it's true that what Jennifer says, many of them, these are people that are sort of been on the fence for a while anyway, and this is a tipping point for them. Yeah.
Well, that's certainly caught the national headlines.
Yes.
Yeah, people stepping away. Our reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack reported this week that some churchgoers are looking at this as a policy rather than a doctrine. So what's the distinction there, Dave?
It's an important one, actually, and it's not just church members are saying that, it's the leadership. Todd Christofferson, in the video he released late Friday night.
And he's one of the 12 apostles.
He's one of the 12 apostles, right, whose brother is openly gay. In his interview with the head of the PR department that was released to the world, he identified it several times as a policy. There is an important distinction. Mormon scholars point to this. The doctrine is seen as bedrock, as things that are not easily shifted, although they can and have shifted in time. Policies are much different, and this is a policy that's spelled out in a handbook of for local lay leaders to basically administer the church. These policies are updated quite frequently, not a ton. Most of them are very minor changes, this is, of course, a more significant one. So policies are much more easily changed. As a matter of fact, in history, you can kind of, relatively recent history, gives us an example of how, of that dynamic. When the Mormon Church more than a century forbid black men and boys from entering the all-male priesthood and black women from entering the faith's temples. For years, that was viewed as a doctrine and couched as a doctrine and interpreted as a doctrine, and different justifications were given for it that some people pointed to relatively obscure scriptures. However, in the 60s, David O. McKay, the then president of the church, declared that it was a policy and began telling people that it was a policy.
That
language is significant, and he especially saw it as significant. Gregory Prince, who wrote a great book actually about the presidency of David O. McKay, relying upon his many, many diaries that he had kept, that the president of the church had kept, saw that and wrote that it was significant in his mind. It was crucial, I believe he said. That paved the way then for it much easier for a later president of the church, in this case was Spencer W. Kimball in 1978, so almost 20 years later, to remove that prohibition.
Interestingly, the presumed new mayor-elect of Salt Lake City, Jackie Biskupski, had some thoughts on the policy this week and when she spoke with the Tribune. Dan, what did she say?
She said that one of her first orders of business was to arrange a meeting with LDS church leaders and talk about a broad range of issues, but particularly this policy. And, Jackie Biskupski, if the votes hold up on Tuesday's canvass, will be the first openly gay mayor of Salt Lake City, headquarters of the LDS Church. And she is also the mother of an adopted child. I think she kind of feels some of this effect of this policy personally.
Here's a a comment on the website, sltrib.com. I hope Biskupski's meeting with LDS leaders is to get them to expand the exclusion to include all children. So I guess this policy has raised questions about the baptismal practice for Mormons. They baptize children at age 8, and it's cast some questions about that age limit. And when you say some kids can be baptized at 8, others excluded until 18. Again, if you want to join us, you can put comments at sltrib.com. You can also call us. 801-355-TALK is that number. Dave, did you have something to say?
Oh, that is interesting. I've noticed a letter to the editor about that again today also. Elder Christofferson's explanation, saying that I think he said something like, "Well, there'll be no harm done, or little will be lost." I think is actually language he used. If they have to wait till they're age 18, of course, many Mormons are wondering, "Well, then why are we spending all this time with primary programs and Sunday school programs for and young men and young women for teenagers, teaching them about the faith? If that can all happen when later, of course, in life." Of course, there's a lot of theological explanations that could support both sides, but that is a question that's arisen even among the faithful.
Another comment on the website, Suji writes, I hope Biskupski takes the time to really listen to the Mormon Church and understand their position. There's a lot of misunderstanding about this policy and about Mormons in general. Do we have a sense, Dan, about the timing? Obviously, she wants to do this as soon as possible.
She said she has made approaches already and wants to meet as soon as possible after the 17th, which is the official canvass when her election as mayor will be made official.
Again, if you want to join us, 801-355-TALK is that number. In the interview with Jackie, what else struck you about her remarks this week?
Well, on that LDS matter, the one thing that really kind of stuck out to me was she posited that perhaps her election was part of the reason for the timing of this policy announcement. I think reactions to that were interesting. Some people thought it was rather presumptuous and egotistical. But, you know, maybe she knows something that others don't. I don't know. Mm. The church has said that it was a reaction to the legalization of same-sex marriage, and you know that's what it seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
She continued what she did in the campaign was to say very little about specifics about what she'll do. And it kind of struck me that there really wasn't one single thing. And you did the interview, Jennifer, and you did a good job of trying to pin her down on specific issues. And she said things like, when you asked, well, what about the Third South bike lanes? Those have been very controversial. Her comment was, well, I don't have a bulldozer waiting to tear those up. And you know, that happened on several of these specific issues that she didn't really have specifics.
We find out definitively who won on Tuesday. The incumbent mayor, Ralph Becker, has yet to concede. I mean, what would it take for him to win, Dan?
It would take him picking up about 2 out of every 3 of the ballots left. And that is a real tall order. I did speak the other day to Matt Lyon, Ralph Becker's campaign manager, and you know his tone and his attitude are, yes, we've lost, but he also said that, you know, that it's not official yet and there's nothing to be gained now by conceding. I think some people think it would be more a matter of protocol and diplomacy to do so, but you know we've passed that bridge now, and they're going to hold out till Tuesday. Matt also was formerly the executive director of the Utah State Democratic Party, and he pointed to 3 House seats last year that Democrats had appeared to win 3 House seats, and 2 weeks later on the canvas, those results were overturned, and Republicans won all 3 seats. They were close, but I think this would be a tougher mountain to climb.
Mm. Again, 801-355-TALK is our number. We've got a call from Nick from Salt Lake City. Nick, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My comment is on the new policy with the Mormon Church. I live in Salt Lake City. I was born and raised here for most of my life, and so I'm, as a lot of people in Utah, I guess, I was born into the church and have been a member since just this last August, actually, when I asked to be removed from the records. But that being my history, I've always seen churches and other organizations, like the Freemasons or whatever it be, they have their policies and they have their teachings, and you can either agree with it or you can't, and it's your choice to be a member or not. So while obviously I don't agree with, you know, some of the church's teachings and some of the things that they do, I also don't agree with people throwing up their arms and making a big deal about it, you know, calling for acceptance and all that. They don't have to be a part of it. You know, it's your choice. You can either, you can choose to be a member of that faith and follow it, or you can say, you know what, I don't agree with these things, and because of that, I'm going to choose to leave, which obviously a lot of people are doing with the mass resignation and stuff like that. But still, I think that there's some people that are making a big deal out of things, you know, just to make a big deal out of it, whether it is really an issue or not.
Are you talking particularly about people speaking out or about media coverage?
I think a little of both. No offense. I think the media will cover whatever is going to get the highest rating. So I think that there's a lot of coverage on things that don't really matter. But at the same time, I think that there's a lot of people that they kind of make a big deal out of things just so that they can be a part of the mix. You know, they can kind of participate in the action and the up-and-coming, you know, issues and all that kind of stuff, when really, I mean, like me, I decided, I'm 34 years old now, so I decided, you know, I don't believe this anymore. I want to seek out other truth with another church, and I did, and with that, I wrote a letter to the church, and I left, and that's my choice. So what the church does at this point, I don't care. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't affect me, and it's not going to affect my children, and it's not going to affect anything with me. And if people don't want it to affect them, then they have the same freedom to, you know, freedom of religion. You can leave.
We've got the message, so. Nick. Thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is the number. Eloise called with a question about what time the rally is tomorrow. Do you know, Dave?
I believe it's like at 1. I just looked at our photo schedule, and I believe it's like at 1 o'clock.
Okay. Well, you can check sltrib.com to pin that down. I'm sure we'll have a story on that later today. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW in Salt Lake City, throughout the state, on Utah Public Radio. You can call us, 801-355-TALK is that number, or send a tweet to the hashtag TribTalk, or put your comments at sltrib.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, here in studio with Jennifer Dobner, Dan Harry, Rachel Piper, and Dave Noyce of the Salt Lake Tribune. And again, you can join our conversation. We're talking about the week's top stories. 801-355-TALK is that number. You can tweet to the hashtag TribTalk. Utah yet making national headlines. Another Utah story that really touched off a firestorm involves a lesbian couple from Carbon County. And Jennifer, what happened?
So this is April Hoagland and Becky Pierce. They are a married couple who live in Price. They are also licensed foster parents. And for the past 3 months, they have had a infant girl in their home whose mother is in the process of having her parental rights terminated by the state. There was a routine hearing on Tuesday in that that process for the mom, as they have done all the time. April and Becky went with the infant. They were asked by the judge about their relationship status and whether or not they were licensed foster parents. They told him yes, and we are married. And at the end of the hearing, he basically ordered the State Division of Child and Family Services to remove the baby from the home. He said that he believed that there was research that supported this idea that children fare better in homes with heterosexual parents than they do with homosexual parents, and he wanted the child removed within 7 days.
Did he expand on that research?
He did not. I understand that attorneys, both the DCFS attorney and the guardian ad litem, which is the state-appointed lawyer that represents the child, asked the judge for an explanation or if they could cite the research. He did not do that. Subsequently, yesterday, both attorneys for DCFS and for the couple have filed petitions with the court, one to stay the order and one for just a reversal.
Tell us a little bit more about Judge Johansson. He has a track record of some unorthodox sentencing.
Yeah, he's a former Emory County attorney. He's been on the bench, I think, almost 20 years. But he's gotten into trouble a couple of times. Once in 97, he slapped a 16-year-old boy in the courthouse when the child became belligerent. And then in 2012, he ordered a mother to chop off the ponytail of her 13-year-old daughter. The girl had been involved in some harassment of other children, and one of those was a 3-year-old whose hair she cut in a McDonald's, and that got a lot of attention as well. So he has a point of view, I guess, is the way to say it. But he's on the bench. He remains on the bench. There's a judicial, I don't know the exact expression for it, but they do a judicial review. He has a lower rating than some other judges for his ability to keep his personal views out of his work, which is one of the main complaints here, that, you know, he's imposing his, from some perspective, he's imposing his personal views in a place where he should not, because under the law, legally married parents, regardless of their sexuality, are if they are licensed foster parents, can have children in their homes.
This ruling even baffled Governor Gary Herbert, as he noted in his monthly news conference. Dan, what did he say?
Yeah, I was interested. excuse me, I just lost my voice. Do you want to go to somebody else for just a
second? Dobner, can you fill us in?
So this came up, I guess, from a question yesterday at the governor's monthly KUD news conference, and he said he was puzzled by the judge's ruling, and that he felt that the judge might not like the law, but he should follow the law, and that the governor was not interested in any activism from the bench.
And that's what I found interesting, that he was suggesting that this was judicial activism. And, you know, the governor's a pretty conservative Republican. Usually you hear that accusation directed at judges from the liberal side. But clearly, you know, this was intended from the other conservative direction.
I think particularly we heard that from the governor when Robert Shelby of the federal courts overturned Amendment 3 to legalize same-sex unions in Utah. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a reversal.
Right, right.
What's the fallout of this action by Judge Johansson?
It's just amazing. This story has just caught like fire across the country. There's been a ton of national attention. Obviously, the LGBTQ community is up in arms. I don't know that anybody can do anything to remove Judge Johansson from the bench. He could potentially face sanction, I guess, from the Judicial Conduct Commission. It'll be interesting to see. These motions were filed yesterday, and it's not clear to me yet if he can just rule independently on the motions, or if he would have to hold a hearing, or if someone else would have to intervene because it's a action basically against his own decision. The documents themselves, because this is juvenile court, are not public. But I filed my own motion on Wednesday. You can do that pro se. So I just filled out the paperwork and filed a motion to force the release. But again, Judge Johansson would have to grant the release of his own documents to the news media, and I am not optimistic.
You know, this would be pretty stunning research if it actually proved what he said, because that was the same argument that was made in many of the federal appellate cases, and it was rejected by all of the courts.
That is true, but I am still getting a bunch of email from people who think that he's right and sending me the research.
And people can think that, you know, they can have their opinions, but this is a judge who's bound by the law as it's been established through the higher courts.
Well, you're right. So we'll have to see how this shakes out. And I don't know how quickly. I mean, Tuesday's the day they're supposed of next week is the day they're supposed to remove this child. She's 9 months old. This adorable little blonde-haired girl with the, you know, pebbles. Little ponytail on the top of her head that I met the other day when I was talking to Becky in April, and she seems extremely happy. I understand that the mother told Judge Johansson during the hearing Tuesday that she wants her daughter in this home, that she believes that Becky and April love her the way she loves the little girl, and she thinks it's the best place. DCFS supports it. The guardian ad litem supports it. The only person who doesn't is the judge.
Dave, you look like you were chomping at the bit. Do you have something to say?
No, actually, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Dave always looks like he's chomping at the bit.
Well, it's interesting because a couple of months ago we had a federal court situation in which, you know, there's a battle over a gay couple who was trying to get a birth certificate from the state of Utah, and that certainly went the way of LGBTQ rights, and I would expect. I do know that DCFS plans to seek a ruling from the Court of Appeals. They'll appeal the decision if they don't get what they want from Judge Johansson. So we may see a quick end to this. We may not.
Okay. The story to continue to watch. Also during that monthly news conference with the governor, he expressed support for another national monument if and only if it's part of a comprehensive land deal that's being sponsored by, I believe, Representatives Bishop and Chaffetz.
Right, right.
Do you want to talk about Bears Ears, or Rachel, do you want to give us some background? Dan, let's go for it.
You know, it was interesting. The governor said that yesterday. He hasn't said such a thing before. He's been very adamant against a presidential creation of another monument in Utah and has written to the president to that effect. When there were rumblings after a intertribal meeting earlier this year, and there was a lot of rumors spreading that, you know, this was the beginning of a secret deal to create a new monument, the governor wrote a letter saying, don't create another monument. But now he's changed, apparently, on that, and said he would accept it. I think a smaller monument, he's talking about $1.6 million as opposed to, I think, $1.8 or $1.9 that has been proposed. But still, you know, a significant, huge chunk of territory there in southeastern Utah. And he's all framing that as part of this public lands initiative that Representative Bishop is sort of leading out on. And
how close is that compromise bill to being actually introduced? We've heard that it's being crafted long time.
It's being drafted behind closed doors. So, you know, we don't know what the bill looks like. We do know that some of the counties have just not participated at all. They've opted out of this thing. So it'll be curious to see what they have put together. And I think there's, you know, this has been going on for a couple of years now, but there's still a lot of suspicion. And one of the reasons there's suspicion is that Rob Bishop is leading the charge, and he's not known as friendly to conservationists and the environment. As you know, he's the one that's in controversy right now because he's blocked the what looked to be bipartisan-supported renewal of the Land and Water Conservation Fund that has built projects and purchased lands in every state in the country, and, you know, some of the beloved things like the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. So there's a lot of suspicion here.
Hmm. The Intertribal Council, Rachel, has been pushing for protection of the Bears Ears region. Can you describe what this landmass is? Where is it? And why are they so passionate about protection?
Well, I mean, it's one of the many places in Utah that is, you know, it's very stunning vistas. And if it has some history down there, and, you know, we've got lots of photos on our site, people can explore and realize that they'll, when they see the pictures, they'll recognize that they've seen these areas before, and that, you know, why a lot of people argue that they should be protected and that those scenic landscapes should remain the way that they are have been for centuries.
And tribal leaders met with the Obama administration. Maybe they met with the president. I don't know, Dan. But has the president weighed in on Bears Ears? We've heard a lot of chatter about a national monument designation through executive order. Anything lately?
Sally Jewell, the Interior Secretary, has talked about this and talked about the cherished and sacred land in this area. Native Americans, their ancestors lived there for hundreds of years, and there are hundreds of sites, archaeological sites and artifacts, and they do consider this a holy land. But one of the reasons that causes suspicion on the other side is that the president has said he will not create a monument where it is not requested and desired by the local communities. And if the Native Americans are requesting this, the folks who are opposed to a new monument see that as the door for the president to go ahead and create that monument. I don't expect, if this public lands initiative legislation comes out, is revealed, that the administration, I think, is going to wait for that. Hmm. They have said they wanted to participate, they want to review this, and I think they will do that unless it's stalled, for months and months more. We're getting to the end of the Obama administration here before too long, and I think that bill will come out, and if there is going to be a monument created, it probably would come out after that and some more attempts at compromise and negotiation, I think.
Other news of the great outdoors. People who fish got a big win from a Utah judge this week. Rachel, what happened?
There was a law a couple of years ago, kind of ironically titled the Public Waters Access Act. It basically said that water flowing through public property, whether that's the Weber River or the Provo River, if you're going to, if you're going to put your boat in or if you're going to go fish in it, where it flows through private property, you are only allowed incidental contact with the stream bed, meaning like if you think your boat's going to tip over, you can, get out, touch the stream bed, right the boat, get back in, and move along. This basically, restricted a lot of people from using the streams in the way that they had for years. I mean, a lot of these areas had been, rehabilitated and made like better access to fishermen. And so there'd been a lot of projects that had already happened to make these areas, kind of designed for people to come and fish on them. And then this law kind of like made all that go away. This week that law was turned over basically. And now people are allowed to go and access these rivers again, even where they go through private land. So that's a win for fishermen and other people who, float the river and that kind of thing. They don't have to worry that they're going to, meet the ire of a landowner if they touch the banks. But there are still some questions. I mean, one of the things that still unknown is easement. Does this mean that you can tramp through someone's backyard to get to the stream if you were allowed to access it, or do you have to put in at a public place? So there's still more to come, but fishermen were very happy this week.
So anglers very happy, the state, which was defending the law, and property owners not so much.
Right. One of the issues was that the state had not managed its information very well, and so they had this map on their website that said, here are all the streams you can access and here are the ones you can't, and it was really, really out of date. There was misinformation on there. So that was one of the items that the judge mentioned in overturning this, is that, there's not a clear restriction and people don't really know what they can and can't do. And so this is kind of a thing that they can't defend. So all those maps are down off the website now. All the websites say, in light of this ruling, we have to rethink everything. So come back later and check out our maps. But so,
so if you're going out fishing this weekend, okay.
Yeah, just, don't come angry.
So is it likely the end of the road or the stream, as it were, for this issue? Will the state appeal?
There probably will be an appeal, but I think that it's not going to go very far, and I think probably the next step will be figuring out sort of more of these nuanced issues of the easements.
Dan, this was a really this was a hotbed political issue when this law was proposed.
It was for years, and it was proposed because the Supreme Court had upheld the right of the public and the traditional right, which had existed for 100 years, and the Supreme Court very clearly, it was a case from Weber County where some rafters going down the Weber River had crossed someone's property. And the Supreme Court very strongly upheld that access, and the legislature said, well, if that's what the law says, then we're going to change the law. And they sure did, and it caused a lot of ruckus.
We will continue to follow that story. Again, if you want to join us, you can put your comments at sltrib.com. You can tweet us to the hashtag TribTalk. You can also call us. 801-355-TALK is that number. 801-355-8255. Let's move to a story that is in, I believe, today's paper, the Boy Scouts. The Scout leaders in Utah reporting a sharp drop-off in donations. And Dan Harry, how bad is it?
They're not quite sure yet because they're still in the midst of this Friends of Scouting drive. But it's in the largest scouting unit, the National Parks Council, which is based in Orem and serves all of the Boy Scouts in the state south of Salt Lake County. The president of the council there, Stan Lockhart, said that they're down dramatically and they're going to lead to layoffs. And other council presidents have said the same thing. They're anticipating a drop-off, and they're preparing for it. And in those cases, too, it probably will mean layoffs. Now, no one is exactly saying why this is, but it does come in the wake of the change that the Boy Scouts nationally announced that they will accept gay leaders. And that caused quite an uproar in Utah. The LDS Church, which is the primary sponsor of Boy Scouts, not only here, but across the country, it is the number one organization that sponsors these scouting units, said that they were thinking about ending their association with the Boy Scouts. It turns out they didn't end that, and they retained the right to judge, the moral fitness of scout leaders who are appointed. But it did cause a lot of disruption, so there's speculation that that's what's causing this. I think along with the fact that there's been, in recent years, publicity about the high salaries of the top executives in the Boy Scouts. I think the rank-and-file folks are not so much, but, those top executives make some pretty good salaries.
Jennifer Dobner, you've done some reporting on this story as well. I mean, what is the message that Utah leaders are really trying to get out there?
Well, so I have a question about why. I mean, if scouting units are going to get local control, so if you can let your community standard dictate whether or not you're going to allow gay leaders, why some of the money might be, dripping away. I'm wondering if people have fear that there'll just eventually be a lawsuit anyway, and then they'll be forced to do it, and they won't really get the choice that the scouting, senior leadership says that they do.
Yeah, and I guess, this is speculation, but I think it's a lot of the publicity out there, people are not real all sure how this was resolved. They know there was, there was a change in policy that allows gay leaders. Some of them, I think, are object to that. And so they've just kind of have been, I think, turned against the organization.
It is kind of interesting to me that this is another place where we are have this tension between sort of conservative ideas and sort of the living in the open for people from who are LGBT. This is so it's sort of like, well, we all these people were here before, but we didn't quote unquote know who they really were. And now that we know who they really are, there's this tension. I don't know if people are afraid, but there's some hesitation.
People are afraid of change, right?
Well,
it's human
all of us
nature.
Are afraid of change.
Yeah.
I hate
yeah.
it. But but we just see this over and over and over again, and quite starkly in this community where the prevailing culture and wisdoms
right.
are so conservative.
You know, and if you look at polling, what you see is that the younger generation, this is not a yeah. big issue
they don't care.
To them.
They really
and
don't.
So, you know, us older folks, among our peers, it is a big thing. But I think in a generation, a lot of this uproar is going to be over with.
Dave, I'm curious what your take is on the messaging. The local leaders here in Utah are saying, well, all the money that you contribute stays here, so mm-hmm. you're doing good for our community. Is that going to sell?
Well, Friends of Scouting, the money stays here, in that it doesn't go to the National Scouting Board, but it does just go to the councils. It doesn't go to the local troops, the local patrols. All that has to be raised independently. So it really is just going to the three Scout councils in Utah and their administrative functions and camps and other things that they do, I guess. So I think that's a big fear. I think also, cutting to what Jennifer said, I do think people fear that a lawsuit is eventually going to make that distinction hard to make on gay leaders. The Mormon Church's fear is they've had gay leaders in Scouts. They've appointed them. But these are leaders that are living the LDS or Mormon standard, which means that they're gay, but they're not acting on it. The national policy does not make that distinction, of course, because that would probably be a hard distinction that might be hard to sustain. So I think that's the fear. Even though there's a carve-out in the Scout policy that the locals can still do it the way they want to. So that might be hard to navigate.
We need to get to another break. But before we do, I want to touch on another major story. This week was jam-packed, was it not?
Yes, it was.
More Utah parents are opting to send their kids to charter schools. So, Rachel, give us the numbers that were released from the State Office of Education this week.
Well, it looks like 1 out of 10 students now is public school students in the state is going to a charter school. So they've hit the 10% mark, which is kind of a big, you know, it shows that charter schools are growing. They're here. They're going to probably just keep growing. You know, the charter school advocates say that they, you know, want the numbers to be more like 30% and 40%. That might still be a ways off, but it definitely is something that parents are responding to.
And so we're on this trend line of growth. They're both public schools. What's the difference between the charter and your regular neighborhood school?
Well, you know, your neighborhood school is sort of, it's by location. You know, your boundaries is what dictates where you go to school for the most part. I mean, there you can change schools, but it's sort of, for the most part, you kind of go where the lines tell you to go. Charter schools, you can go, you know, your parents can enroll you in a charter school anywhere. And a lot of the charter schools have very specific, you know, learning things. You know, like there's like the C.S. Lewis Academy, which focuses on literature and, you know, using literature to then also teach the sciences and math. So that's something that you're not going to see in your random public elementary school down the street. And so that's what, you know, charter school advocates say parents want, and that's what they appear to be sending their children to.
Well, I guess the big question is the money question. So if charter schools are growing, they're taking money from the regular public school system. I mean, how does that pencil out, Rachel?
And that's something that they is a constant fight. I mean, there's this idea that these, I think they call like ghost students, where they look at the enrollment numbers and say, okay, X number of students are going to this charter school over here, so there's money that's going to come out of the district. Some of the students do end up coming back into the district, and then their funds stay at the charter school. And so it's sort of, you know, the districts are saying that they are bearing some of the brunt of this. You know, they're losing money, but then they're also having to still educate those children that they're supposedly not having to pay for anymore.
This has touched a nerve with a lot of parents. I imagine at the state legislature, Dan, we're going to see a lot of talk about charter school funding. We need to go to a break, though. We're talking about the week's news. Again, 801-355-TALK is the number if you want to join us. We will be right back after another quick break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW in Salt Lake City, throughout the state on Utah Public Radio. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce with the Salt Lake Tribune. Time for our final segment, the underplayed story of the week, a story that's going to continue to grow and we will continue to follow. And who wants to go first? Okay, Dave.
I'll
Dave
start.
Noyce.
First of all, I have
it.
Confirmed that mass resignation rally is at City Creek Park tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Thank you very
anyway,
much.
The underplayed story, in keeping with our theme, it seems, of the day, Out Magazine, a gay magazine, has named President Obama the ally, its ally of the year, and citing his evolution, especially on same-sex marriage, getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, those things. The interesting thing, though, he also has become the first sitting president to pose for the cover photo of an LGBT magazine.
Interesting. I like that. Okay, Rachel.
One that we are going to be hearing a lot about if it snows is that Salt Lake City is launching a snow removal pilot program, which basically says that on certain days, based on the street address, the odd or even calendar day, and street division, it would you would have to park on a certain side of the street. If you park on the other side of the street, it will impede snow removal and you'll get a warning.
Okay.
So are they going to bury my car?
And this is going to work as smoothly as those parking kiosks. They're assuring us that.
Okay, stay tuned for that. Dan Harry.
The state fair. A group of legislators yesterday made a recommendation that the state fair stay at the traditional fairgrounds, and that the state re-up the lease there, which is close to expiring, and pour some money into fixing it up. And, you know, I think for the folks in that area and people who still love the state fair, as corny as it is, that's a good thing.
Fried Twinkies.
I'm going to say, what's not to love about the state fair?
I agree.
Indeed. Jennifer Dobner.
Shout out to my colleague Mike Gorrell and his story about the $400,000 the county spending to shore up the and repair the facade of the Capitol Theater. It's just a beautiful, beautiful downtown building, and they're doing some repair to that architecture to preserve it, and I think that's cool.
I do too. My pick is going to be a piece in today's paper. It's a story that we've been following for a long time about solar power, and advocates got a bit of a setback from the Public Service Commission this week. That's the agency that sets utility rates. The agency has been in this long-standing dispute with environmentalists who say, look, you're going to punish those who make an investment on their house to put solar on. Now it looks like they agree that with Rocky Mountain Power that everyone needs to pay something to maintain the grid. So that is still an open question. I think that's something that's going to build. Jennifer Dobner, Dave Noyce, Rachel Piper, Dan Harry, thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
We're going to wrap up this week with Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. This week, he talks population growth.
You know, everybody worries about that. They do. Like, eventually the world is going to get too full of people and we'll all have some horrible thing happen to us. But nobody takes into account that the world has a way of thinning the herd. Every once in a while, we'll get a plague we can't handle or something like that. And but it does give you pause when you see the world's population increasing dramatically. And so I wrote a column when the world reached the 7 billionth mark. In a particular week, they assumed that, or they estimated that the world would tip over that 7 billion mark. And I wrote a column about it, and I said, exactly where we will store all these extra people is a matter of some concern. You can always make more people, but you can't make more Earth. There are 196,939,900 square miles on this planet, only 29.2% of which is terrain a human being can actually stand on. With every birth, the number of people per square mile of standable land gets bigger. This might not concern you, but it should. Lines at Disneyland will probably stretch to Nevada. Emergency room waiting periods will get longer. People will be bringing sleeping bags and canteens to the DMV. I don't even want to think about rush hour gridlock. With another 1 billion people in the world, driving home from work could take an entire day. By the year 2030, you might just as well stay at work for the rest of your life.
Don't go anywhere because there's no room to move.
There's no room to move, yeah. And it's all relative. You know, when we went to London, space meant different things to people there. You know, they considered if you had somebody at arm's length, that was, you know, quite a ways away. Here, you know, we get a little uncomfortable if people are in the same room with us. And in England, you can, there's so many trees that it's sometimes hard to see long distances. Whereas in Utah, we're used to seeing 20 miles at a glance, unless a mountain gets in the way. And so it's all about frame of reference, I guess.
But you wrote in your column that you and your wife are not having any more children.
Yeah, we're not having any more children. We've both reached the age where it would be highly improbable for her to become with child again. I, on the other hand, could probably have another kid, but if I did, it would have to be with another woman, and my death and the baby's birth would probably cancel each other out.
That's Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby. Again, you can read a lot more Kirby on the website, sltrib.com. That's it for this edition of Behind the Headlines, a production of KCPW, UPR, and the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks so much to Jesse Ellis and Roger McDonough at KCPW, Tom Williams and Bennett Purser at UPR, Emily Means from the Tribune. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce from the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend.